Welcome to Everything Pro Wrestling. Everything Pro Wrestling is a show by the fans, for the fans. And here's your host, Conrad Cushman.
You're listening to Brain Buster Radio.
ECW One Night Stand really focused in on the fans for the opening shot of the show. They go around the Hammerstein Ballroom. You can hear fans chanting ECW, ECW. And I think the purpose of this was to show the fans' passion for ECW. And I still think that it's not rivaled by many others that fans really, really loved ECW. Now, the purpose of them panning around was so that they didn't show you the stage right away. And then when the cameras are zooming in and zooming out, they cut to the stage. And it's like the perfect symbolism of ECW is back tonight. And it makes you feel really good in 2005 to see ECW once again. And you're going to get to see something different than what we have with WWE, because at that time, you had Ring of Honor and you had TNA, but they were just starting to rise up a little bit more, and the options weren't really there for mainstream wrestling fans. So here's ECW once again to give you something different to watch. And we go to the ring where Joey Styles is in there, and Joey Styles seems emotional by the reaction he is getting from the fans. And Joey Styles is a beloved character in ECW. He was the one-man commentary team, and Joey Styles did very well at commentating by himself, and he does not get enough credit for it. But Joey Styles was in there getting quite emotional, and the fans only wanted to hear one thing from Joey Styles. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Everything Pro Wrestling. Everything Pro Wrestling is a show by the fans, for the fans. And I'm your host, Conrad Cushman, and we are bringing you a retro review today of a classic show that I remember very fondly because, in my mind, it didn't happen too long ago. It is ECW One Night Stand 2005 that took place on this date 14 years ago, and a lot has changed in pro wrestling since then, and you are able to see it in this show. It happened June 12, 2005. At the time, I had probably just graduated high school, just getting ready to start working. I believe I was a salesman at the time, still selling those Cutco knives. It was my very first like real job that I went out and did all the time. Very different, man. Very different life back then. But I remember watching this pay-per-view at Jordan King's house, B-Boy Skyline, who is in the Facebook group. And I enjoyed it with him, Rob, Brandon. And actually, got to give a shout-out to Robert Anderson as well. This idea to do this review came from Robert Anderson not too long ago. And big shout-out to my Brainbuster Radio team, especially Josh and Kevin from Wrestling Reverb, who recently reviewed this show as well. Hopefully I can bring some different insight to it and you guys will enjoy this as well. The show took place where? At the Hammerstein Ballroom in New York City. We had a sellout of 2,500 tickets sold. ECW was a big deal and I don't think people realized it. And just think, ECW was out of business for 4 years at this time and people still craved for the ECW brand. Just shows what Paul Heyman did was really a movement, and he had a lot of fans who were just salivating at the opportunity to sink their teeth into some more ECW. Now, pay-per-view buys for the show, it's been said, and I'm going to go with this number, that it's going to be 325,000 pay-per-view buys, which is crazy to think of today with what AEW just did for Double or Nothing, and people were happy to hear 100,000 pay-per-view buys. But back then, it wasn't as easy to find a live stream, and rumor has it WWE could have had even more pay-per-view buys for this event if they had their internet right at the time, because their online, where you could watch pay-per-views during that time period, was not working properly because it was in such high demand for people to watch ECW One Night Stand. Absolutely crazy. But this is a big show for WWE. So how did they stumble upon doing this ECW show? Well, it all starts back to WCW and ECW going out of business, and the WWE were able to acquire those libraries, gaining video footage, access to their libraries, and more, some of their talent. And during that time, the WWE were releasing DVDs, and the DVDs were starting to feature matches from WCW, ECW, classic anthologies, and they came out with a DVD called The Rise and Fall of ECW. And now I have to go on a little side rant here. Robert, I know you still got my copy of this. I need that back, good sir. That's a classic. Maybe me and him could do a review on it together, but Robert knows that's an absolute great DVD. I'm sure he's watched it many times. But WWE was trying to take advantage of all of these libraries and use it towards their DVD sales, because back in 2005, DVDs were a big thing. You had your PlayStation 2, you'd pop in a DVD, you could watch a wrestling DVD all the time. And I absolutely love the Rise and Fall of ECW DVD. Teaches you a lot about it, and it's also probably got a little bit of a WWE narrative perspective on it. But you hear from a lot of the wrestlers, and they kind of tell truths about Paul Heyman not paying them and everything else. I absolutely recommend this DVD. If you have never seen the Rise and Fall of ECW, after you're done listening to this, I would highly recommend you go out, find yourself a copy, and you can listen to it. You could watch it, listen to it. It doesn't matter. It's simply tremendous. Really good DVD. I think it's in my top five best DVDs WWE has ever produced. So with that being said, how did they stumble across One Night Stand? Well, the ECW's DVD, the Rise and Fall of ECW DVD, did very well. And if you believe all the stories that happened behind the scenes, Rob Van Dam, it's said that he is the one who suggested to Vince McMahon the idea of One Night Stand, a one-night ECW tribute show, which is absolutely perfect for the times because fans still chanted ECW when crazy stuff happened. Fans still missed the ECW name. And at this point, it was becoming nostalgia. So if you were going to do something with it, this was the perfect time to do it. So they ended up getting Tommy Dreamer to reach out to some of the former talent that would never get a shot in WWE because they didn't look the part. They weren't the part. It just wouldn't work with them during that time because WWE had a particular look that they liked. So he ended up getting a bunch of talent for this show. And at the time, I thought this was the first ever ECW type of tribute show. But boy, was I wrong. I guess Hardcore Homecoming happened before that. And Terry Funk, who was supposed to appear on this show, said he couldn't do two shows. And he had already signed up to do Hardcore Homecoming with the franchise Shane Douglas, who was left off of this show. I wonder why. That's another story for another day, though. And it was all forgotten about. But at this point, guys, I want to get ready to get into this show. So let's talk about ECW One Night Stand. Oh my God! That is exactly what the fans wanted to hear from Joey Styles. It was then announced that he'd be introducing his broadcast partner, which turned out to be Mick Foley. Mick Foley didn't do too bad here, but it wasn't the nostalgic Joey Styles voice that everybody wanted to hear. But you know what? It wasn't too bad with Mick Foley, and I don't think there were too many other better candidates than Mick Foley to do this for the spots that were given for each part of this show. Now, the opening contest for this show, we had Lance Storm with Dawn Marie, who was pregnant at the time. Dawn Marie still looking good, versus Chris Jericho. Now, we got to see the tag team of the Thrill Seekers, and they were set to battle it out. And if you didn't know, the Thrill Seekers were a tag team from Jim Cornette's Smoky Mountain Wrestling. So Lance Storm and Chris Jericho go way back, way, way, way back. And if you didn't know, they were each other's first opponents. They were a tag team together, and it's kind of really fitting that on this ECW show, which everyone thought would be kind of a one-off thing, that they were going to face off with each other. And this was Lance Storm's last match in WWE, technically. He basically had left a little bit before this to focus on his Storm Wrestling Academy, which is still going strong today. If anybody is interested in becoming a wrestler, he has so many people in the business who are phenomenal wrestlers. Some of my favorites trained with Lance Storm. And Chris Jericho, as we know, he is doing big things in AEW as we speak in New Japan Pro Wrestling. Hopefully we will see him in the G1 Climax. But back to ECW One Night Stand. These guys are out here to put on a show. Lance Storm donning his old attire, coming out ready to wrestle Chris Jericho. And Jericho comes out wearing the Lionheart Chris Jericho attire like he did in ECW. What a throwback to ECW. In this match, you can expect to see some really good wrestling in this match. We see Tiger suplexes, moves that you're not normally going to see in WWE during this time. Now, Jason, someone who used to run with the Impact Players, interferes in this match, and he gets clocked for his efforts by Chris Jericho. And then here comes Justin Credible, who ends up having to eat a springboard dropkick along with Jason to be knocked down. And during all of this fallout, Jericho ends up going back towards the side after being pushed into a kendo stick shot from Lance Storm across the head. And 1, 2, 3, Lance Storm picks up the beautiful victory. Really fun match. Great way to open up the show. I gave this a B+ for what we saw here. Lance Storm winning was kind of a way, at least when I watched it live the first time, to know, oh, this is real. I like this. I like this a lot. They're going with the throwback ECW stuff. They're not going to just kind of make this a WWE pay-per-view. So I like what I had seen so far. And caution note here, the songs in the original version of the pay-per-view were purchased so that they were used. So you heard things like Enter Sandman for Sandman, you know, Man in the Box for Tommy Dreamer by Alice in Chains. But they normally would not do that. And if you go back to watch this on the WWE Network, the songs are modified. So don't expect anything different from it. Really sucks, but that's just what it was at the time, unfortunately, while dealing with the issues of paying for music rights. Then we get a tribute package delivered to us by Pitbull Number One, and they talk about all the talent who has passed away. I thought Gary Wolfe doing this was a nice way to pay tribute to some of the past performers, like you guys may know him as Crash Holly. He competed in ECW, Pitbull Number Two. So Gary Wolfe did a tremendous job with this, and they go through a bunch of names, which makes you really sad to think that they have passed, but a classy move nonetheless. And Chris Gandino was the focus of the package because it sucks that he couldn't be here to perform this one last time for this event. I know he was doing stuff with TNA Wrestling right before this, but Chris Gandino, absolutely one of the best in ECW. So, yeah, just sad to see those guys all go. Match number two, we had an ECW-style three-way dance. Now, this match had Tajiri, who was managed by the Sinister Minister, James Mitchell, and Mikey Whipwreck came to the ring from him. Mikey Whipwreck from Buffalo, New York, represent. And we had Super Crazy in there, because he's super, and he's crazy. He didn't say that in ECW, but always loved that line. And Nunzio, accompanied to the ring by the FBI, which had, like, it feels like 30 people. I'm exaggerating, but he had a lot of people in the FBI group here. So during these three-way dances, and most of you don't know, ECW-style three-way dances meant elimination. So one person would be eliminated, and then it would get into a one-on-one match, and you get your bang for your buck, excuse me, for this match. So we're looking at this, and these guys had some really great three-way dances in, like, 1999, it's 2005, so you're not going to see these guys moving as fast. The older you get, you start to lose a little bit of speed. You're a little rusty, but these guys still were able to do their thing in there. Super Crazy at one point in this match did a moonsault off the balcony. I'm going to repeat that. Super Crazy did a moonsault off the balcony. Things like that you don't see anymore, and they're absolutely crazy. But Super Crazy was the man for the job back then, and he did a hell of a job with that. Tajiri, man, this guy ends up blowing mist onto Nunzio, who is on top of the top rope there, getting ready to dive off. And Tajiri ends up catching him with some mist, knocking him down. And he's stuck on the top rope while him and Super Crazy are kind of like going at it. Mikey Whipwreck ends up getting into the ring and he hits a whippersnapper from the second rope, which is a Stone Cold Stunner, if you don't know, off of the second rope. And Nunzio gets eliminated by Tajiri. 1, 2, 3. So now we're down to Tajiri and Super Crazy going at it. And these two deliver one heck of a wrestling match. Tajiri had a different look in ECW, but if you've ever seen him and Super Crazy wrestle, nothing but good stuff here. Super Crazy gets the win with the moonsault. Great for this match, a B-. Nothing that you could really complain about here. And this leads us into an ECW moments package. Well, I take a quick sip of water here. Oh, man. ECW, baby. So our next match is going to be Rey Mysterio Jr. versus Psychosis. And one of the memories I have of this match and watching it live was when Psychosis finally comes out for his entrance and he removes his mask. All the fans are chanting for him to put it back on. And I kind of feel the same way about it because that's not the Psychosis you want to remember. Psychosis had a pretty sweet mask and he was no longer competing in it, and I don't know. I think fans really hated that time period of, like, Juventud Guerrero losing his mask and Psychosis and Rey Mysterio in WCW. Don't remind him of that. So the fans were kind of pissed off in the beginning that Psychosis had lost his mask. Afterwards, Rey Mysterio, fans were not feeling him. Like, from the moment you watch this match, Rey Mysterio is usually someone who is beloved by the wrestling fans. And they just weren't feeling them. I don't know what it was during this time. I don't know why. If anybody has any speculation to why fans just didn't like Rey Mysterio, please let me know. Anybody but my man Ice, Philip Timms, please do not message me because I know what you're going to say. So you better cut it out about Rey Mysterio. But Rey Mysterio was really weird in this match for what he had to do to get the crowd kind of on his side. But these guys ended up having a really quick match. They went in there. They did like a feeling out process to start it out. They're doing, you know, test of strengths and everything else. Things got started once they get to the floor. Rey Mysterio gets suplexed across a guardrail. And Psychosis delivers a guillotine leg drop from the top on the back of Mysterio's neck. And then the fans were kind of starting to get into it. They were doing their usual crazy stuff from ECW. But this isn't 1995. These guys are older, and it's 2005, and you could add another 10 years on when you look at some of these guys today, but Rey Mysterio is in there coming off the ropes, doing his hurricanranas. He's doing his head scissor takedowns. Rey is doing his thing, and it's weird. When Rey Mysterio goes for the 619, the fans booed, and the only thing I could put this as would be that the fans did not want WWE Rey Mysterio. And he kind of came out there with an attire similar to that, the shoes he was wearing. And I think that he was just too WWE for them and what they wanted. And doing the 619 just makes them think of that because he didn't do that stuff in other companies. But when Rey Mysterio hits the West Coast pop, they cheered. So that's like WCW, ECW Rey Mysterio. And that's how he ended up getting the win. I really feel like this match could have been close to a B-, but due to the fan reaction and everything else, I gave it a C+. I still think it's a solid match, that one that you can go back and enjoy. Just the crowd reaction wasn't into it. Now we start to see the anti-ECW people come in. SmackDown and Raw both had them. They were called the anti-ECW Crusaders, and the SmackDown side is coming in, being led by JBL at the time. JBL is just now starting to find stuff to do after WrestleMania, and he's still going with his gimmick, and he's probably the loudmouth for the job. So JBL leads them in, and we get some more ECW memories while Joel Gertner, Mr. Well, it is I, the quintessential stud muffin, Joel Gertner. And Joel Gertner gets in there, and he is trying to basically get in there, talk a little bit. They're trying to cram as many people onto the show as they can, and it's just not, it's not happening at the time. And Angle and JBL like shoot Joel Gertner off. We get RVD. He comes out. His knee is still in a knee brace from a knee injury with Bill Alfonso. He comes out to cut a promo. RVD's promos were very different back then. In the beginning, RVD even talks about this in the promo, how he's finally allowed to say more than just, oh, cool, whatever, all right, dude, because WWE viewed him as just the high guy. ECW let Van Damme talk a little bit, and he was kind of a showboat, and he knew what he was talking about. In this promo, though, RVD was a little bit all over the place, but his passion was there. And that's the one thing you could see from this. So RVD does a really good job until Rhino slides into the ring and gives him a gore. He gores him out of his boots. And Rob Van Dam is there. He eats the gore. They don't know what to do. Fans are happy Rhino's in the ring. And then lights out. Who could it be? And then the lights come back on, and it's Sabu. Sabu is back. Fans cannot believe it. Sabu ends up hitting Rhino with some chairs, and tonight, I know we see Sabu a lot on Botchamania, but tonight Sabu was on his A game, and he deserves respect for it. And this actually bumped up my grade for the match, because Sabu didn't make too many mistakes, and he took a lot of hard bumps, falling face first onto the chair without a drop toe hold. He was just going down for a lot of stuff. And he was hitting all of his moves, whether it was diving off the chair into the ring apron, jumping off to fall to the floor. Sabu was on point in this match. And the finish comes when Rob Van Dam comes out after the referee gets knocked out. Sabu gets pile driver, RVD shows up, and then he starts helping Sabu out, and he hits a running dropkick chair to the face, I guess you would call it, of Rhino. That's how it feels commentating a Rob Van Dam match. And Rhino goes down, and then they set Rhino up for an Arabian facebuster from the top rope, and Sabu just drops right on top of him through a table onto a chair, and he gets the pinfall, 1-2-3. Grade of a B-. Very, very good stuff here from Rob Van Dam, Sabu, and Rhino. And I liked what they did there with Rob Van Dam as far as getting him involved in the match despite his injury. So good stuff from everyone involved in that one. We go backstage to Al Snow yelling at Head. This is where the original gimmick started for Al Snow with the mannequin head. And he's yelling at Head for bringing in the SmackDown Live anti-Crusaders, and basically says he's going to get blamed for this. And then after that, here comes the Monday Night Raw anti-Crusaders led by no one other than Eric Bischoff, who hated ECW. And you have to admit at this time, Joey Styles kind of goes and puts over how ECW hated WCW. And I'm sure that Vince was feeding all of this to them, and that WCW did so many underhanded tactics to steal from ECW. And this is partially true too, to an extent. WCW took guys like Rey Mysterio, Psychosis, Eddie Guerrero, Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko. We can go through a lot of names, and they took a lot of their talent. And can you blame them though? These guys were excellent wrestlers. And speaking of some of the talent I just named, they're in the fifth match for this show, which is Chris Benoit versus Eddie Guerrero. Now, when people think ECW, they often think that you're going to see tables, women rolling around on the ground, catfight, wildness, the fans throwing chairs into the ring. ECW also promoted great wrestling at the same time, and Chris Benoit and Eddie Guerrero are two prime examples of that. Now, these guys never got to fight in ECW, which sounds crazy. It was never promoted, Eddie Guerrero versus Chris Benoit, but this match was pure wrestling. And the only thing I could say about this is I feel bad for Chris Benoit and Eddie Guerrero slightly, because the fans were more focused on chanting towards the balcony due to the Raw guys coming out there. And they were just chanting like crazy things at them, chanting stuff about Lita. And they weren't paying attention to Chris Benoit and Eddie Guerrero. And you can see it in parts of the match here where Eddie doesn't take the bump quite as well as he should. But Eddie was kind of pissed off probably that they weren't focused on them. So we see a really good match between these guys, diving headbutts, frog splashes attempted, all of that. And in the end, Chris Benoit locks in the Crippler Crossface, and he finally gets Eddie Guerrero to tap out. I gave it a grade of a B. It really made me sad to go back and think, though, that in a few months, we're going to get like Eddie Guerrero against Rey Mysterio for the custody of Dominic. And not too long after that, within a few months after that, we're going to have Eddie Guerrero gone. And then within a year after that, in 2007, Chris Benoit is gone. You can't help but think about that stuff. Really, really sucks the sadness. I'm glad that these two got to have this match on this show. They always have good matches. It's just sad, though, just to think about looking at stuff in retrospect. We get back to the show, though, and we have Joel Gertner asking Eric Bischoff for a job. He comes over with photos and says that he's got a tape, trying to introduce himself to Bischoff, and Eric Bischoff kind of dismisses Joel Gertner after that to build up the heel heat amongst the anti-ECW Crusaders. And we get to match six on this card. And if you have never seen these two battle, you have been missing out as a wrestling fan. I can remember their matches in ECW as a kid. And like I said, at this time, I'm 18 years old, and we're going to see Mike Awesome versus Masato Tanaka. Joey Styles, while Mike Awesome is coming out, gives him crap all the way to the ring. He hates Mike Awesome because he jumped ship to WCW. Now, let me explain this. During the time, Mike Awesome was ECW World Heavyweight Champion. So they put everything in behind him, and Mike Awesome had an offer to go to WCW. Mike Awesome, as the ECW champion, boogied out and went to WCW, just showed up on Nitro, and that was it. He was like, I'm getting paid. I need the money. This is what I got to do. In wrestling, that's taboo. You really shouldn't do that. That's a no-no. And Mike Awesome was still the ECW champion. So who was going to do something about it? Eventually, Taz was the guy lent to ECW to get the belt off Mike Awesome, and he was chased out of the arena. Well, I love the fact that Joey Styles still played off of this hatred that he had 4 years later for Mike Awesome for what he did. Just really good storytelling, and even back then, just thinking about that, who would have ever thought a WCW contracted wrestler and a WWE contracted wrestler would have a match for the ECW title? Stranger things have happened in wrestling, so never say never, right, guys? So Mike Awesome, who is he facing in this match? Masato Tanaka. Masato Tanaka comes from Japan, and these guys have had some of the stiffest, nastiest wrestling matches you have ever seen in your life. These guys are just all over the place. A lot of their matches just involve power bombs and DDTs through tables. And in this match, that's what you're going to see: table spots, power bombs, tornado DDTs, crazy, crazy, crazy chair shots. Chair shots that you will never see taken again in pro wrestling. Nobody should be bashed over the head like that with a steel chair unprotected. And that's what these guys were doing. It was kind of toned down from the ECW ones, but you still saw some nasty stuff in here. Even on the power bombs, people were getting dropped on their necks. Just hard to just look at that stuff. And I don't know, man. The match ends crazily. So there's a table set up on the outside. They're in the ring. And Mike Awesome and Masato Tanaka have traded victories back and forth in their career. And Mike Awesome picks up Masato Tanaka and Awesome bombs him through the table onto the floor. That should be it, right? Not enough for Mike Awesome. He dives through the ropes or off the ropes. I don't even remember how this happened. And he lands on top of Masato Tanaka and pins him on the floor. 1, 2, 3. Mike Awesome gets the victory here. Really good stuff. Awesome match. I give it a grade of an A minus. There is one other match that could potentially rival this, which is the main event match. And I call it really close, but if I have to give a victory to what is the best match, I'm going Mike Awesome, Masato Tanaka here. I thought this was really fun, and they did a lot of good stuff here. We cut back to Joey Styles. Joey Styles thanks everyone who bought the Rise and Fall of ECW DVD, and he actually basically explains that you buying that DVD made that show possible. So without the Rise and Fall of ECW sales, there would be no ECW One Night Stand. So it does show that the fans have a powerful voice, and the main thing that they can use for that voice is money. So Paul Heyman then comes out. He comes out for a shoot, and Paul Heyman comes out with the classic ECW hat. He's got the press pass. He's got his long leather black jacket on. Heyman's out there looking like he always does, and he comes out. And he tries not to get emotional, and he comes with one of his most classic lines that we got to throw in there about him not crying, even though I feel like he was. Here's what he had to say about that.
I want you to know I'm not crying. My eyes are red because I was in the back smoking a joint with Van Damme.
And you know damn well that got the people to pop for that one. Paul Heyman goes on one of these shoots that a lot of wrestling fans enjoy. I still see it up on YouTube in clips today. Fans were really feeling this. He thanks the fans. He thanks Todd Gordon. And he even takes some shots at JBL, who is up there as one of the anti-ECW crusaders. And he tells JBL that the only reason he was the longest reigning WWE champion on SmackDown Live was because Triple H didn't want to work Tuesdays. Edge is sitting up there drinking a drink or a beverage, whatever it may be. And he says that he's got two words for him, which it was actually three, and it's Matt freaking Hardy. And Edge spits out this drink comically. I thought that it was funny the way Edge did it. Edge oversold it, but that's how WWE guys were doing it. And even when he said the line to JBL, JBL grabbed his heart like, Elizabeth, I'm coming. Oh, and they kind of took it as a joke. Whatever. Heyman laid out what he had to say for it, and it was very ECW-esque, so I thought they did a really good job with that. Let's get into the main event match, which was a tag team match for the Dudley Boys versus Tommy Dreamer and the Sandman. Now, the Dudley Boys come out, and they are rocking ECW baseball jerseys and tie-dye attire, which is classic Dudley Boys, and they went out there to do their thing. And here comes Tommy Dreamer. Tommy Dreamer came out to his classic song, but nobody will ever forget the Sandman's entrance. Sandman getting to the ring took so long when you look at it. But while the event was actually happening, I don't remember like even thinking about that because it was just so cool to see the Sandman coming out. He comes through the crowd. He has his beers, his cigarette, the Singapore cane. He even shares a beverage with a few of the fans. It was good stuff all the way across the board. Can't complain. Sandman is not the greatest wrestler. He is just kind of like a spectacle. It's cool to see him, and fans just digged the Sandman. So this was the last appearance for the Dudley Boys before they get ready to go to TNA and become Team 3D. Now, we have the BWO who then find their way out to the ring. And the BWO comes out in their classic attire with Stevie Richards, Nova, and Meanie. And they're out there. Here comes Kid Cash, who ends up getting into a little bit of scuffle with them. Balls Mahoney and Axel Rotten are out there. And they come out, and they're ready to fight. And Kid Cash earns his money because he ends up doing a crazy-ass dive onto everybody who's on the floor from the miniature brawl that started off everything. So it got a lot of people featured on the show, whether they were kind of like clustering them all in just to have them featured. As you could tell from all of the interference and all of the names I've mentioned, even with the FBI match and everything else, they were trying to shove people onto the show so their faces could be seen. And whatever, it got everybody a payday, and this is what ECW was during this time. I don't think fans would like that as much today, but it worked for the time. So in this match, we have all seen the classic cheese grater across Tommy Dreamer's head. Tommy Dreamer is bleeding really bad from this at this point. And Bubba Ray Dudley takes Tommy Dreamer's blood and smears it across his own face. That doesn't seem sanitary, but this is ECW. So during all of that, these guys brawl. We get some really close near falls. And eventually we have some things happening where they get the Dudley boys down, and Sandman and Dreamer end up locking in figure four leg locks at the same time on both the Dudley boys. And then here come the Impact players. That's Just Incredible and Lance Storm. They come out there with Dawn Marie, et cetera, et cetera. And eventually we see a tombstone, AKA That's Incredible, on Sandman onto the barbed wire. And Tommy Dreamer ends up eating a kick to the junk from his former good friend Francine. And Francine ends up getting pretty mad. Shout out to Francine if you guys haven't checked out her YouTube channel. Francine ends up stirring up enough stuff that here comes Beulah McGillicuddy, who is Tommy Dreamer's real wife. And she gets into the ring, and Beulah and Francine roll around, and, you know, classic cat fight. And they're rolling around, you know, skirts are flying up, everything else. It's ECW. And I know I keep saying that, but that's just what it is at the time. That's what you expected from wrestling at this time. So I know a lot of the fans of women's wrestling are like, what is this? That's just what they did. So Dreamer and his wife end up hitting the figure fours were great, but these DDTs didn't look great either. But it was good for what it was. Dreamer and his wife DDT the Dudley boys down. We get some near falls out of that. And then we have Bubba, who comes in and uses the cane on Dreamer and Sandman to take them down. Sandman eventually gets powerbombed through a table, and we get a 1-2. Sandman is able to kick out. Dreamer ends up eating a 3D, and then here comes Spike Dudley in a tie-dye shirt, and this leads to the spot with the table, and Bubba Ray Dudley douses that table, the entire table, in lighter fluid. Like, he was making sure that table was on fire. He ends up kicking people while he is dousing the table, just so that time didn't seem too weird with how long he was dousing the table. So everything is covered. They light the table on fire, and Tommy Dreamer eats the powerbomb through the table, and 1, 2, 3, the Dudley boys get the victory here. I give this a grade of a B+. Really well done. It was borderline A. Like, this was as close as I could get to not giving a match an A, I feel, in quite some time. But they did their thing. I thought this was the second best match of the night. It's up there with Jericho and Storm. Really good stuff. Absolutely loved it. Now, there's some after-the-match stuff. So the Dudley boys go to attack Beulah, but Sandman comes in with the cane, makes the save, and he then goes to help his fallen friend Tommy Dreamer, who just got powerbombed through flames. And afterwards, he's yelling for a beer. Well, I don't know if that was the signal or what, but then here comes Steve Austin. So Steve Austin's coming down, and all of the ECW talent begin to come out because Austin called them out. Then Austin calls down the anti-ECW Crusaders, and they're all in the ring basically doing like the classic face-off, like the line is drawn. They're all in each other's faces. And then here comes Taz. And Taz got taken out by Kurt Angle on a previous SmackDown because Taz would not join the anti-Crusaders. And Taz looks pissed. Taz comes out in his baseball jersey, and he looks like he's ready to take someone out. Well, during this whole brawl, JBL, if you guys have never heard the story, stiffs Blue Meanie in this. He jacked Blue Meanie up really bad. Like, Blue Meanie is bleeding from all types of spots on his head because JBL was throwing real punches. Like, what a jerk. He gets a receipt later on, though, from Stevie Richards on, I believe it's the episode of SmackDown when they invade. And JBL gets his eventually for it, but I guess all has been forgiven between JBL and Blue Meanie, so good to hear that they were able to kind of come to a resolution. Maybe JBL was just being too overzealous that night. Maybe he had a couple too many to drink, and he shouldn't have been in there. I don't know what the situation was, but that was it. And then eventually Angle gets outside of the ring and Taz locks on the Taz mission on Angle, going back to their Royal Rumble 2000 kind of debut and how Taz debuted against Angle. It was all very cool to see it. So Angle is locked in the Taz mission. He's down. And then Eric Bischoff is making his way towards commentary. I don't know how he got up there eventually, but he's up there talking. And Steve Austin tells Foley to bring Mr. Bischoff down to the ring because he needs to come in here and basically see what ECW is all about. And he ends up eating a 3D, a diving headbutt from Chris Benoit, a 619, which gets booed once again for Rey Mysterio. And he asks him what he thinks of ECW now. Bischoff yells he hates ECW. He might have said it in a worse way, but I'm not going to use that kind of language right now. And he ends up eating a stunner, and the Dudley Boys take Bischoff all the way to the outside where there's a semi-truck out there, and they kind of just toss him on the semi-truck like he's out of the arena. And we see this big celebration. There's a beer bash celebration with all of everything going off the air. And this show is summed up as the ending of this, which was an ECW tribute. Now, I thought it was very well done. The timing was good. And I really feel like this, to me, is the period on that's the end of the ECW story. I don't count any of that WWE CW stuff. I don't want to think of some of the other shows that happened afterwards. I know they did Hardcore Justice and all that other stuff in TNA, but this was it for ECW, in my opinion. ECW was great for what it was. I loved ECW. I love some of the characters, and I'm glad that some of them got the chance to make it in WWE. And this show is going to have something weird. I told you the best grade on here was an A- for Mike Awesome Masato Tanaka. This show is going to get a higher grade, the overall grade. I'm giving an A. How can you do that? Well, this was a tribute show, and the promos, the fans, everything else that was added in here was a grade of an A to me. This was all very well done. I was very happy with how WWE produced this because going into it, I really thought they were going to mess this up. I'm like, is this really going to be ECW? They don't own the rights to the music. They're not going to do all of this, this, and this. And they ended up shocking me in doing that. So I will never forget watching this with my good friends from high school, Jordan, Tracy. Thank you guys for letting me watch this back then with you guys. It was good fun. Jordan, big wrestling fan back then. We see him in the group now, and he's disappointed with some of the stuff, and it kind of breaks your heart to see that. But we had so much fun watching wrestling back in the day, and I will never, ever forget watching this. This was just a great show. So much fun with it, and it was all about the brand that people love so much, ECFNW. All right, guys, before we get ready to get out of here, I do want to show some love to everybody who's been doing their thing in the Everything Pro Wrestling community. That's everybody on the Facebook page. If you follow me on Twitter, thank you guys so much for interacting, giving me questions, things to do, the Wrestling Wednesdays, the Follow Fridays, whatever day of the week it is. It doesn't matter. You guys have been doing tremendous stuff, so I thank you for that. Also, big shout out to everybody at Brain Busta Radio. Brain Busta Radio has been working with some tremendous people. I have some tremendous guests lined up as well to do the podcast with, which I will be announcing soon. And you guys are all going to love some of these podcasts that I have coming up. I guarantee it. So make sure you guys click that subscribe button so you don't miss out. Also in the description box, I have my ranking system for how I did all the grades for this show and the grades that I gave all the matches if you wanted to go back and take a look at them. Also, make sure you guys check out the two links in there, the link trees for EPW show. That's where you guys can see my YouTube channel. Subscribe. We're getting real close to 500 subscribers, so make sure you subscribe to the channel. Really helps out. Also, check out Brainbuster Radio stuff. You can go in there and see what Brainbuster has to offer as far as listening options and merch. And same thing with the EPW. We have more listening options and merch and stuff in there as well. We use the link trees to help everybody out so you don't see a million links posted into one video, one podcast, Hopefully you guys get to check all that out. But thank you so much for listening to my ECW One Night Stand review. If you guys go back and watch it, tell me what you thought. I want to hear your thoughts of the show. Hopefully you guys can find a version with the proper music in it so you can see the hype. But with that being said, guys, I'm out. Enjoy your Wednesday and enjoy the rest of the day, no matter when you're listening to this. I'm out.
Peace.